Hi everyone, this is Joyce, and you're listening to Powerhouse. In this episode, I speak to Mik-Young Kim, founder and executive producer of M. Kim & Co. She talks about her journey from working for Michelle Gondry and Alejandro González Iñárritu to founding her own creative agency.
Hey, welcome to Powerhouse. I'm excited to have with us today Mik-Young Kim. She's the founder and executive producer for M. Kim & Co. and is a collective of advertising and production producers. Let's just get straight to it. Perhaps you can give an overview of your background and how you got to the current position.
Well, so I started out knowing that I wanted to do something in filmmaking. I didn't really know what exactly, but I used to make lots of videos when I was a kid growing up, so I ended up majoring in film in college. I moved to LA, worked with my dream directors, Alejandro González Iñárritu and Michelle Gondry at Anonymous Content and Partisan, which were pretty big production companies there. And then I accidentally moved back to Hong Kong. I grew up in Hong Kong and started working as a producer here, and then went to Ogilvy as the head of TV before starting M. Kim & Co. a couple of years ago.
And have you always known this is the career path? I know you mentioned you like to do videos when you're younger, but did you envision being a filmmaker and being a producer?
Well, I knew since high school that I wanted to do something with filmmaking. I really enjoyed creative advertising back then too. I remember even going to a film festival showing of commercials back then. So I was always pretty interested in how advertising could bond creative and commerce together. And even when I was in college, I also studied Michelle Gondry's commercial work. I just loved it. I thought it was so beautiful and creative. And obviously this is well before I knew I would work with him. But I even wrote a paper analyzing one of his Smirnoff commercials for college. So I didn't know back then that I would end up in advertising commercial production, but I always knew I wanted to do something with filmmaking. And so, 10 years later after graduating from school, well, actually more than 10 now, 12 years. I'm producing commercial campaigns through my company, M. Kim & Co. And we're actually a collective of producers that work with creative agencies and brands to produce their commercial campaigns. And so we're all with advertising agency producing backgrounds or production producing backgrounds.
Oh, that's really cool. It's pretty hard to break into the film industry and advertising. Maybe you can talk about what's your first big break and how did you come across that opportunity?
Well, I guess my first big break would have been working with Michelle back in LA at Partisan. He was a director I admired so much. And so I was so grateful to get to work with him. And before then, I had been working at Anonymous Content with Alejandro González Iñárritu, but unfortunately, because I didn't speak Spanish, it couldn't turn into a permanent position. And so I actually moved into the accounting department at Anonymous, which was interesting as well, because, you know, that's the fundamentals of production in a way, and for producers to have a good understanding of accounting. But it was just a bit too removed from actual production life and understanding what went on in production. And so I knew that I needed to move on from that position. And luckily this role became available at Partisan to be an assistant to the producer there. She was also the general manager of Partisan and the CFO and a longtime producer for Michelle. Her name was Julie Fong, and I knew of all the films that she had done for Michelle. And so I was really, really excited to have that opportunity and moved to Partisan for that, and also got a working visa because I'm not American, so I had to go and go through that. And And so that was definitely my big break. And that experience really helped me get a job when I moved back to Hong Kong as well. Just mm-hmm. having that like credibility as well, working for such a big name director, even though I was still quite young and mm-hmm. just, you know, a few years experience, it really made a big difference for me.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like a very good opportunity. And maybe you can expand a little bit in terms of what are the specifics that you feel like you really learned from that experience that you brought back and be able to kind of continue, or if you look back, what would you really learn from that that held up in terms of, or helped you in your producing and now starting your own company?
Well, it was an amazing experience, but it was also very challenging. I would say my time in LA was very much a producer's boot camp. Mm-hmm. I probably learned, you know, about 6 years worth of producing experience condensed into 3 years. So it was pretty turbocharged, and you know, at times it was very difficult, but mm-hmm. so worth it. I learned what kind of producer I wanted to be, mm-hmm. what kind of you know, how I wanted to run my productions, also how not to be as well, I think was important for me to realize that. And I mean, I was still quite young. I came back mm-hmm. to Hong Kong when I was 23, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. LA was the very beginning.
Sounds like you had so much experience already, right? So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It was tough. And I think it was, I guess one of the biggest learnings I got from that was being open to feedback and mm-hmm. improving on your weaknesses. No one's mm-hmm. perfect, and there's always opportunity to learn and improve no matter how experienced you are. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, at that age especially, I had no experience, or, you know, was just starting out. Mm-hmm. But it's hard for everyone to admit that too, to admit right. that you have a weakness at something and that you aren't excelling. That no one wants to hear that. But I think the biggest learning for me was to be open to constructive criticism and realize that there was always room for improvement. And even if it sucked, even if it hurt to hear that, there was always some kind of truth to it. And room to improve. I think it's just good to have that kind of self-check. And especially for people who are running their own business, I think that's even more important, because you don't have, like when I was at Ogilvy, we would have reviews with your right. With your boss or with your team members, and you get that feedback annually. Right. But when you're running your own business, you may not always get that. So unless you ask. So I think it's important to take that initiative.
You kind of touched on, going to school and learning, like you did filmmaking in school. Now, how different was it in terms of, do you feel like you were well prepared from just, you know, going through the training in school, or is it very different from real life? And then all that boot camp really helped.
I think for me, what was the best takeaway from film school was actually figuring out what within the film crew or position wise I wanted to do. Going in, I had no idea really what does a producer do, what does a director do, or DP, editor, all those things. I had no idea until I studied it and actually worked on crews. And every weekend I would spend my time crewing on set, just trying different positions just to see what I liked. So I tried everything from producing, directing, DPing, editing, you know, I even did hair and makeup, like production design, sound recording. You know, I actually got really good at being the best boy electric, strangely.
Nice.
Which is like a really manual job. Like wrangling cables and like hooking up the generator and the lights to electricity. And I was like, I don't really want to do this as my career.
Like, I'm good at it, but I don't want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I wasn't even that good at it. I was like just okay at it. I was like, yeah, I don't want to do this. And also, like, you know, to go up from BBE, it was to be a gaffer, but I knew I was a terrible gaffer. All my lighting setups were just atrocious. And I was like, there's shadows everywhere. I don't know how to fix it. Like, this is not, like, right. The lighting department is not my path.
Right.
So I tried everything. And mm-hmm. I realized that producing was something that I enjoyed doing the most. And I was also, mm-hmm. Was one of my strengths at doing, mm-hmm. I think just because I was organized, but I also really enjoyed being part of the creative process and having a mm-hmm. say, and also being involved from start to finish. I quite enjoyed that. As a producer, I really find my purpose and value and understanding like what that vision is, mm-hmm. the creative vision is, and being like a key part of making that creative vision possible.
Right.
Is what I really enjoy.
That's great. Yeah. So you learned that you really want to do producing. And so I guess that hones in that particular position when you had your first job. And
Exactly. So when I got a chance to be the assistant to Julie Fong, who is the producer for Michelle Gondry, it was like, mm-hmm. I felt like I hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dream my job, first right? job.
Yeah. First job out of school.
Wow. That is amazing. I mean, especially since you kind of know which path you want to go down. So,
yeah, exactly. And also, I guess in LA or in the film industry in general, it's pretty common for people to freelance and crew mm-hmm. on sets, and then they, you know, join the union. But I didn't have that choice as well. I couldn't right. PA on sets because I wasn't American.
Right.
So I had to get a full time job.
Right. Sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so talk a bit about your journey of coming back to Hong Kong. So you said it was kind of just by accident, you had to move back. And then, but then obviously it turned out, you know, great. And then maybe mention a bit about your career at Ogilvy, how you got that job and the learnings there as well.
So this was about 10 years ago when I decided to leave LA. It was getting to a point where I just wanted to change in my career. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to resign from that job. And, mm-hmm. But because I wasn't an American, I had to leave the US. Okay. And so I came back to Hong Kong, and I was actually planning to go back to the US. I had applied for grad school in New York. Mm-hmm. And I, remember that summer I visited New York. I was meeting my professors and, applying for my classes, or you know, revising the schedule, and I just had this very profound feeling that it wasn't the right choice to make, mm-hmm. And that going back to school wasn't—I wasn't actually ready to go back to school. For me, during that time when I was back in Hong Kong applying for grad school, I also just took that time to meet people in mm-hmm. Hong Kong in the industry, more just to learn what was happening locally, mm-hmm. And just to network really. And through those coffee catch-ups, it actually led me to a job. And it was a post-production company called Pixelbox that mm-hmm. did commercial post-production for commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered me a job as a producer, and I thought, oh, wow, actually, this is way more interesting than the prospect of going back to grad school. But my experience working at Partisan in production in LA and at Pixelbox in post-production in Hong Kong really led me to this opportunity at Ogilvy, because that mm-hmm. was when, this was, I guess, 7 years ago now, mm-hmm. six mm-hmm. or 7 years ago. Yeah, it's a long time ago, when eight creative agencies were realizing that content, online content, was going to boom, and that there was going to mm-hmm. be a huge need for like a production unit within mm-hmm. the agency.
Right.
And so Ogilvy Hong Kong was the first agency to start this, because Ogilvy is also the biggest agency, creative agency in Hong Kong. And mm-hmm. so they had the means to do this, and they came across my profile and thought it was interesting. I actually hadn't had any agency producing experience before then. Mm-hmm. And so, but they really wanted someone who came from production experience to run it within the agency. And so I came on board to do that. And I think with, all of my experience, you know, really supported me to be able to take that opportunity.
All comes in the right timing as well, and just being ready for it also. So what made you decide to start your own agency, and how do you know that was the right time?
Well, it all started because actually a few years ago, I realized I wanted to, more for personal reasons, I wanted to spend some time in Korea to work and live there because I'm Korean. I was born in Korea, but I moved to Hong Kong when I was 2 years old, and I've been raised in Hong Kong ever since, besides those few years I went to the US for college and for work. And so I wanted to experience what life in Korea would be like before I put down any roots anywhere. And I went to Korea for a year to improve my Korean. And I also ended up working with Chael on a Samsung campaign to launch a new product. And so that was the first experience I had working on a project outside of Ogilvy, kind of on my own, like I guess as a freelancer. So it gave me a taste of that life and gave me a bit of confidence and curiosity as to whether that could be a path for me. And so when I came back to Hong Kong, I decided to continue exploring that a bit. And so I continued to freelance and working with different agencies. So I worked with ADK in Singapore, and I produced a campaign with them for Toyota with the 2020-2021 Olympics and Paralympics. And so that was a year-long project, and we produced 12 films, 50 key visuals. Like, it was a huge project, profiling different athletes in Southeast Asian countries. Really inspiring project. It was all following these athletes, championing a social cause that was important to them. And so we made those films. And then I was working with Forstmann Bodenfors for a project with SK2, also with the Olympics. That hasn't been launched yet. That was due to launch in a couple months, actually, but it will, I think it will be launched next year now. And so that was pretty cool. And so I think all these opportunities were coming in, and I wanted to continue going with that, because for me as a producer, my mission is to just continue creating great work, producing good creative work is what motivates me and keeps me going. Because producing is, as you know, producing is tough. It's, you know, stressful. Job.
When and, you're doing it, you're always like, why am I doing this? But then when you're done, you're like, that was so, so gratifying, right? In different ways. So
totally, totally. And so, so I'm always motivated by the launch, by it being done, by people seeing it and enjoying it or getting something out of it. Like that's what, that's what motivates me. And so, you know, when you create good work, then more people will watch it. That's just the way it is. And so I think that's what is why I wanted to start M. Kim & Co. And we started organically with, you know, creative agencies or brands approaching us about projects. And, you know, I needed more producers to come on board to handle the different projects that we were coming across. And so that's how we've started. And it's, we're still a small team and a collective of producers. And, you know, hopefully, let's see, with these times right now, with coronavirus times, I think, you know, all industries are impacted, advertising being one of them, of course. And so we'll just have to see how it goes in the next few months. But hopefully we'll, when brands and agencies are ready to start producing content again, we'll be here and ready.
What is then along those lines, what's one of the most successful project or move so far?
I think my most successful project so far would probably be the Hong Kong Ballet campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it that's amazing. Was received, that's really good.
Thank you. It was received really well. The agency was Design Army. They're based in DC. And the director is Dina Alexander. And they are just a powerhouse of creative energy and mm-hmm. vision. And of course, the Hong Kong Ballet themselves, the creative director at the Hong Kong Ballet sub-team has also had a huge hand in it. And I think this project, well, it just, so many people watched it and it even got on the front page of the Washington Post, which was really cool. Yeah. So yeah, you don't really, it's not every day you see an advertisement, you know, land the front page of a newspaper just for it being cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like it awesome. Wasn't a paid placement. So it was, it really went all around the world. And I was also just so proud to be part of that project as a producer because, well, Hong Kong is my home. And especially in these challenging times, it's nice to have something that celebrates the beauty of Hong mm-hmm. Kong and something a bit more positive.
Right. And it's definitely done in a very fun and colorful and lighthearted way as well. So it definitely captures people's attention. So, I mean, with success and the journey towards success, there's always some, you know, down moments or failures. Was there any point in time that you really wanted to give up or to do something else or think that this is not, maybe it's not something right for you?
When I was working in LA, it was really difficult. I guess it was difficult because, I mean, even though it was an amazing, valuable experience, it was difficult for me because I was so young and experienced and mm-hmm. I lacked self-confidence and mm-hmm. I just didn't know how to manage my time very well. So I was burning myself out and I was just so mm-hmm. overworked. And I recall feeling like I wanted to get hit by a car on my way to work, just not to die, but just so I could have a really good excuse to skip work that day because I was just so tired. Oh, wow. I just wanted to rest.
Right.
And so when I realized I was getting that kind of feeling frequently, I thought, okay, well, I need to make a change because you know, this is not like sustainable, obviously.
Yeah, not healthy, right? Yeah.
Not healthy at all. And you know, back then I wasn't eating very well. I didn't exercise. I was probably drinking too much to alleviate the stress. And so I was just not in good mental or physical condition either. Mm-hmm. And so that was all just draining me. I remember going to the doctor back then because I was just feeling chronically tired all the time. Like I wasn't actually sick, like not a cold, but I was just always so tired. And I thought something was wrong with me. Right. I would go to see a doctor for that. So it was really quite bad. Mm-hmm. And I decided to make a change. And that's also one of the reasons I decided to leave the US and come back to Hong Kong, which, you know, was the best decision I made.
Right. That's great. Yeah. And you mentioned a bit about the self-confidence as well. Can you expand a little bit about that? Is that something kind of recurring or, you know, since before film school or before working, or you feel like just from that job because it's so grueling and, you know, kind of makes you doubt yourself a bit more?
I definitely had self-confidence issues since I was growing up as a young girl into college or even into my first few years working as a producer when I was back in Hong Kong. I mean, I probably didn't really get my true self-confidence until recently, I would say, you know, maybe a few years ago. I was always second-guessing myself, maybe doubting myself. And I think that's normal as well for people to be a bit unsure of themselves. Mm-hmm. But I think what I realized was that because it is normal, everyone is such a common thing. That if I'm feeling unsure, the person I'm talking to could be unsure as well. And that's okay. Right. And that's why I think it's important for everyone to support each other through their work life or personal life. Because you never know what other people are going through as well. And everyone's usually trying to do their best.
Right.
So I think that is something I always try to remember. Mm-hmm. I think also as young women, self-confidence issues is something that is something that everyone can relate to, you know, whether it's your body confidence or personal life confidence or work life confidence. Right. And something that really helped me when I was younger was I read this book called Why Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office.
Right. Yeah.
I read that. I read that 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that book and also reading Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, really are two books I would recommend to young women who are starting in their careers to read, because it really opened my eyes as to what I wasn't doing and that I should have been doing,
right.
Especially with self-confidence. One of the pieces of advice that I remembered was to just fake it until you become it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just if you don't have the confidence, that's okay. Just fake it. But if you tell other people that you're not confident, then they will not be confident in you. Especially as women, young Asian women, it could be easier for people, you know, other people to dismiss you if you are not confident about your words or your actions in the workplace, especially.
Right.
And so I think that's even more important. It's even more important for women to be better and to be more confident, because they'll need to be. That's how our voices can be heard. But also the other thing is, if you're not confident, maybe it's because you're not prepared. So do the homework, do the research, be more prepared. Practice, anticipate the conversations you may have. Like if you're worried or have self-confidence issues about doing a presentation in front of your clients, then practice beforehand.
Right.
You know, ask a colleague if they can pretend to be the client and do a practice. And that's totally normal. Some people have a natural ability to just get up in front of a room full of strangers and talk, but most people don't. And it takes a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I was reading Michelle Obama's book, Becoming, and I remember feeling like, oh, wow, even Michelle Obama has to practice for her speeches.
Right.
How normal, like even a woman like Michelle Obama, I think she said that she would spend several hours practicing her speeches before she'd have to go live with them. And for some reason, I always thought, oh, Michelle Obama, it just comes to her naturally because she's amazing. But no, she's just normal like the rest of us.
That's great advice. And with what you're saying in terms of, we see speakers, politicians, I read it as well. I mean, like some other leaders and you'd be surprised that they actually practice a lot, right? They're like, no, I'm not natural. And, you know, you just have to do it. So I think that's great advice from you. Say, well, if you're not confident, just make sure you do everything else that you can help, you know, the situation. If you're going to feel nervous, well, it's going to happen. But if you're well prepared, at least you're not going to stumble as much. I guess you exactly. still have that baseline, you've practiced it, and you know the material. So with all the work and all the hard work you're doing, what are some of the things you do to just relax, unwind, or even just kind of get a breather and get your inspiration?
As a producer, it's often a lot of creative problem solving, right?
Absolutely.
And dealing, speaking to lots of people who all have different points of view. And so it's all about managing all that. And it can get very busy and stressful. And so for me to unwind, I really love to have a sweat, just to exercise, do some sport. I really like CrossFit, dragon boating. Yes. I'm on a team called Buzz Dragons in Hong Kong, which are great. Yoga, hiking, walking, just moving as much as possible, you know, going for a run, get some fresh air. I mean, these days, because I've been trying to not go out as much, I just walk on a treadmill sometimes. The other day I was reading and walking at the same time to take a bit of a break during the day.
Wow. What is that book that you're reading, or any other recommendations for? And you had a few before, but maybe current book recommendations you have.
Well, the book that I'm reading right now is called Pachinko. I'm halfway through it, and it's just amazing. Even though I haven't finished it yet, I can tell it's going to be my favorite book this year. It's about the Korean immigration experience, and it starts during the Japanese occupation at the start of 1900s, and it follows one family and the different generations through that family. So right now, so it started in the 1900s, in the early 1900s, and now halfway through, we're in the 1950s now. And so it's already, it's just following the different family members of each generation. And it's a beautiful, beautiful book.
I'm always curious. So are you an introvert or extrovert?
Well, what do you think I am?
Well,
I'm an introvert. But I think I can flex to be an extrovert fairly well. Well, I don't know. You tell me if you think.
Yeah, no. So I was going to say, you know, you definitely come off more extrovert, you know, but I wasn't surprised to read the answer, just because I think also, you know, being a producer, a lot of times I feel like you do need, like, it's a character that needs to draw energy within yourself. You gave a lot of great advice along the way. Any other advice that you wanted to give our audience as well?
Well, I was curious to know what your advice is. What are some things that you live by?
My advice would be not to overthink things. Don't wait for 100% confirmation on, like, again, whether it's your something that you're interested in, or, you know, starting a business or starting something. Don't try to get like 100% of the data or get all the information before you delve into, you know, jump into something, because you're not going to get all the right answers, even if you think you did. So that causes more inaction than actually just take a stab in the ground and say, okay, I've got enough information. I'll take the calculated and educated risk. And if this is what I want to do, I'll just do it. And don't overthink it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more on that. I think it's important to have that bigger vision and goal, but it could feel quite overwhelming to achieve something like that as well. For example, like with sports, if you wanted to run a marathon, like, you can't run a marathon tomorrow. It's just, you're going to probably injure yourself along the way, and it's going to be a horrible experience. Yep. You know, so, but you can have that goal, but break it down into smaller micro goals so that you can achieve that bigger goal eventually, right? So you have a training program, you know, you run 5 kilometers and then 6 and then 7 and 8, and you kind of go up and up and up until you reach 42. And I think that it goes the same way with that principle, can be applied to anything in your life, especially in your career. If you have a goal to be the CEO of a company or have your own company, like, well, then break that down into small steps. What can you do, you know, in between that can help you achieve that greater goal? And just try to do that one at a time. And I think that's something that is really important for everyone to think about, to be able to achieve what they want in their life.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks, Joyce. Thanks for having me. Thanks to talk to you.
And that's Mikyoung Kim. Thanks for listening. Feel free to subscribe, comment, or message us. Thanks.